All right, guys. So tonight we are tackling a topic that's of interest to most people, which is understanding a Jewish wedding. Who has attended an Orthodox wedding?
I never have.
Okay. So I know that Carly has because she was actually in one.
Yeah.
Our cat won.
I'm going to a Chabad wedding on Tuesday in Pittsburgh.
All right, so this is good. So I'm gonna get you guys all locked and loaded. So I'm gonna share with you a video. This is actually, and I'm gonna sort of tell you, sort of break it down play by play.
What?
You okay?
Yeah, I'm just guessing.
I'm not sure why it's worse than that. Okay, here we go. I'm gonna do a share screen. Are right, those who are on the thing? Do you see the computer? Do you see the video screen?
Yes.
Okay. This Michal, this woman here, Michal, backing it up. She was a fellow, just like you. Here's Michal and Joey. Here's a husband and wife. She was a fellow 10 years ago. She made Aliyah to Israel, and she scheduled her wedding in Israel to be during the fellowship trip, and she invited that year's all the fellows, even though they never met, just to join, which is pretty darn cool. All right, so here we go. I'm going to give you play-by-play. Here we go. What's that, guys? What do you call that?
Chuppah.
A chuppah. What is a chuppah?
The first house they create together.
The tent of Abraham.
Okay, so it's symbolically like the tent of Abraham, but essentially it's basically part of the legal process of the husband bringing the woman into his household. More of that later. We'll keep on going. This is in Jerusalem. It was beautiful. Fast forward. Okay.
Yom Bracha. Very wise decision.
Yeah, very wise.
You waited for the right person to come along.
Very nice.
You saw.
Okay, those ring. Okay, here we go. Back that up. Okay. What are they signing over there? What's that document they're signing?
A ketubah.
What is a ketubah?
Marriage contract.
If they don't do a ketubah, are the husband and wife married?
No, not by Jewish law.
Yeah.
Incorrect. All right, here we go. Isn't
the ketubah most important for getting divorced?
We're gonna explain all that. This is why you're in the fellowship. We're going to explain all the concepts here. The Jewish wedding, essentially the essential part of the thing. There's two parts of the wedding. We'll see. There's scene one, was called the Kiddushin, the betrothal, where the groom, in this case, played by a guy named Joey, gives a ring to the bride, the Kala. Her name is Michal. And what is he acquiring in that transaction, which is witnessed by two kosher witnesses?
A wife.
Property.
No. He's acquiring the right of exclusivity. Exclusivity. Okay? And it's done with the blessing on the marriage. And then he says, you are betrothed to me. We'll get to that momentarily. The ketubah is what? The ketubah is the, was created by the rabbis, the rabbinic, who's on, put your guys on mute if you're not talking. I'm hearing some crying baby here.
It's Chucky.
Chucky. All right. You got babies. The bottom line is that the I'm muting him. I just muted him. Okay. So the ketubah basically says as follows. It's really it's a document that the husband articulates his responsibilities to the wife. Some are mandated from the Torah, which are automatic. Some are rabbinic, which are again automatic, but he articulates that he has to support her, honor her, cherish her, even if it means, as all good Jewish men. Then it says, in case of death or divorce, he has an obligation to pay, the Hebrew phrase is 200 zikukim kesef, which basically translates to a year of full support. This was a backup to ensure that the guy would not do what they call love him and leave him. So basically to create a financial thing that basically that the guy would not just get involved in the marriage and then leave in a quick manner. Because motivation that he leaves the marriage, he has financial responsibility beyond the marriage. Okay? And then made another rule that you can, that the rabbis made another rule that the husband and wife cannot live together unless they have a ketubah, which is binding, and the document is nowhere it is. Okay? So the ketubah is rabbinic in nature, but it has a very important role. It was the first document there to protect women's rights in the ancient world.
The wedding.
It was not really that was not really a big priority. Women's rights. Okay. But the Torah, but Judaism was about women's rights from the time of the Torah and then thousands of years ago. Okay. So these witnesses are this guy's. If you see the video, he's signing as a witness. He saw the groom, i.e., Joey. Lift up a handkerchief, a kippah, a pen, showing that he's accepting responsibility on all the obligations of the ketubah. Now, it could be that the husband and wife, if they get divorced, they might elect to make a separate arrangement, right? And then the wife would really, quote unquote, give up the right to the ketubah. You cannot double dip. You know what I'm saying? So they have a divorce settlement, which in New York oftentimes can be as upwards of 50-50. Which is far more, way more than the ketubah, then she will then give up enforcing the ketubah. But the ketubah is basically as a default setting to ensure that the woman is protected. Does everybody understand that? And any questions? All right. Okay. All right, let me go on the video. All right, so I'm assuming everybody understand about that?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so now we're going back to we have to sign the tuba. We have okay in Israel we actually the groom signs. In America that's not done. Okay, but that's not essential. Very well. Now there's what when you go to a wedding, what mitzvah are you accomplishing?
Gladdening the bride and groom.
What?
Gladdening the bride and groom.
Yes, mesamech hatam v'kala. In other words, in America, the bride and groom are concerned about their guests, that they have a good time. In a Jewish wedding, we, the guests, have to make sure that the bride and groom have a good time. It's completely the opposite. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So when you go, when you get invited to a Jewish wedding, you have a responsibility to make sure that they're happy. Look what
so don't bring the drama.
What?
So don't bring the drama.
Don't bring the drama, but bring the joy. Here we go. So here we go. The dance.
Here we go.
The dance. They're walking the chuppah. He's signed the ketubah. And they're going to have the bedekin. They're going to have the, put the veil over the bride. Another possibility of, part of the, demonstrating a community that Joey here is doing, and goes back to the time of when Jacob got the different wrong wife, you got Ray instead of Rachel. How common that members of the family will go and watch them for the same time. Now they're going to, now they're going to the spot. Dancing again. I'm wearing my tie over there, guys. Where's the tie? Okay. That's it. Is that any sound coming through? So walking down the aisle, nice, we'll have the back 40. Very nice. So far. Okay, this is the, now, you have to know about Jewish law, there's four buckets. So in Judaism, you got to know about the four bucket rule. Has anybody told you about the four bucket rule?
No.
Okay. You have to classify any Jewish law into four categories. Of course, number one is Torah law, a biblical law. So the mitzvah of marriage is on a biblical law, okay? Then there's a rabbinic law, which is added, additional legislation made by the Sanhedrin, by the rabbis. That's, for example, creating a ketubah, right? Then there's customs. For example, some communities walk around the bride walks around seven times. Sephardic and German Jews do not walk around the groom seven times. These are called minhagim, customs. That means they're not, in other words, they're not critical for the wedding. You know what I mean? In other words, if you don't do it, and you're doing the biblical law and the rabbinic law, you're still good, but various communities had certain customs, okay? So this is an example of a custom. All right, then the fourth category of practice is called stuff that Jews do. Okay? They're not customs. Like, you have to walk down the aisle. Let's say everybody met at the chuppah, but you have to walk down the aisle and you have to throw rose petals?
No.
No, that's just what stuff that Jews do. Okay? It has no legal obligation. Okay, walking down the
thing. You always look at each other.
Okay.
Okay,
hold on. This is important. Back it up. So Rabbi Wild's here, starting off, one glass of wine, he makes the blessing on Borei Pri HaGafen, on the wine, and he makes the blessing on marriage. Here we go.
Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech olam asher kiddushanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu al harayah v'asar lanu et harusot v'hitir lanu et hanesuot lanu al yedei chupa v'kiddushin Baruch atah Adonai mekadesh shemo Yisrael al yedei chupa
v'kiddushin. Alright, so Rabbi Wiles just made the blessing on the wedding, on the marriage, and now they're going to give wine to both the bride and the groom. Here we go. This is Act 1 of it, all right? All is, boys use white wine, boys don't use red. Oh, we're using red wine, bad mistake. Okay, whatever you want. All right, now, this, I'm hearing a little dog here. All right, why is she sticking her finger out?
For the ring.
Why is she sticking her pointer finger out?
Because that's the one that has, like, I don't know, to go near the heart, I think.
She's pointing to him.
No.
It's for a very practical reason.
Because it's the seventh finger?
No.
He's pointing to him.
No. He's sticking out the finger in order to, when the groom says, "Behold, you are betrothed to me," in accordance with the law of Moses and Israel, and the two witnesses that witness it can easily and readily see it, okay? This is the biblical marriage right here. The blessings are rabbinic add-ons. This is the biblical mitzvah, kedushin, called betrothal. Here we go. Everybody can see this?
All right.
Behold, you're betrothed to me.
Behold, You are consecrated to me. By this man. According to the law of Moshe and Israel, the Kadeshites.
Okay, that concludes part one of the Jewish wedding. You have the Kedushin, or the betrothal. At that point, if they would then stop the wedding, and then they would get into a big fight and want to separate, would they require a divorce, a get or not? Yes or no?
A get.
Would they require a Jewish divorce, a get, if they would then separate at this point right now?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, they would, because they're essentially married now. Right there. When he gets his little hand off that finger, it's on her finger. That's it. She is exclusive to him. It's been witnessed. It's showtime. Now. All right, clear? Gone. That ends act one of the wedding. Then we have the intermission, which is the reading of the ketubah. Here we go. We have to have a hot one. And by the way, they were older singles. So they were like both had dated like a zillion people. I know it never happens in New York. I know you're very unfamiliar with this phenomena. So it was like a quadruple simcha for them because she was late 30s and he was in his 40s. And, that's why it was a mega simcha. And she was a fellow. She was, you guys are year 13. She was, I think, year 3. Okay? Year 3 or 4, Michal. And then she made Aliyah. She moved to Israel. She went on her Israel trip, on her fellowship trip, and then she stayed. All right. We're going to have a hug here. Okay. We move on.
On the fifth day of the week, on the 28th day of the month of Av, the year...
All right, so I'm reading an English translation of the Ketubah. I've already read the Hebrew one, and now we're just doing the English one.
Year 5772, corresponding to the 15th day of August 2012. The Holy Covenant of Marriage was entered into...
2012, 8 years ago.
...between the bridegroom, Joey Eckstein, and the bride, Michal Cohen. The bridegroom made the following declaration to his bride. Be my wife according to the law of Moses and of Israel. I have faithfully promised that I will be a true husband unto you. I will honor and cherish you. I will protect and support you and will provide all that is necessary for your sustenance in accordance with the usual custom of Jewish husbands.
All right, so the ketubah has been read. And that's just done to, the reason to read the ketubah is A, to make sure that everything is legit. If there's a mistake, they can correct it. And to separate between the kedushin, which we did, the betrothal with the ring, and then Act 2, which is called the seven blessings, the Sheva Brachot. Have you heard that phrase, Sheva Brachot, before?
Yes.
Okay, so there's a special blessing when the marriage is completed, to say seven blessings of praise. And typically, it's an honor to call up different people to say the seven blessings of praise. We'll get into that.
Mazel tov.
It talks about different aspects of marriage.
Why do our sages refer?
Also, we have speeches. Also, we'll do speeches between...
Yeah,
all right, so here's calling up different family members and friends.
ברוך אתה, אדוני אלוהים, איך עולם אשר ברס אסון ושמחה, חתן וקלה, גילה רינה, דיצה וכתבה אהבה ושלום ורעות.
All right, so there's reading the Shabbat brachos, and they're all drinking it. Okay, they're now married. Now, where do they go next? Okay, just to...
The Yichud room.
Who said that?
Alpha. But if they're Sephardic, they go at the end of the party. But Ashkenazi, go right there now to the Yichud.
The Yichud room means the room of seclusion. The room of seclusion is their inner locker room where about roughly 9 or 10 minutes, where they theoretically could consummate the marriage. Typically, they're fasting the day of their marriage. It's a common custom among Ashkenazim. And then they, in turn, well, at that point, they're fully married. Okay?
But,
now,
yeah.
What's next?
The party.
That's right. So there's a, once you've had the wedding, it has, there's an obligation to have a sudat mitzvah, a meal of mitzvah, right? And you're going to, and to be involved in making the bride and groom happy. And here's some good video clip of that. Anyway, the youth room. All right, he invited a whole fellowship class that was there for the fellowship trip, and she didn't know them. All right, we're getting down. Getting down. Alright, you gotta put a Jew on the chair. Alright, get together. Got a little broke. Having a good time. All right, the MG wedding, gonna have to have some American music. There's Never Wild. Back that up. That's a good footage. We're happy. We're happy. Hey, we're all done dancing around. Rabbi Avi Heller, East Side, also on the fellowship trip.
Berecha Joey.
All right.
Magish, I couldn't.
All right. All right. So that is the wedding. Thereby cool. This is the basic structure of a Jewish wedding. So I'm going to review it. Two Jewish people, they date, they want to build a Jewish home together, they fall in love. Now, what does a woman have to do before she goes to the wedding to get married?
Go to the mikvah.
She has to go to the mikvah. She has to be, they're part of the laws of family purity, is that in order for a girl to have sexual relations, she has to be after a period, there's a time of waiting, and then she goes to the mikvah. Okay?
Isn't it suggested that the man goes too?
Doesn't have to, but there are some customs that they do that. Hasidic Jews go to, Hasidic men go to the mikvah all the time. Regular Ashkenazic men go to mikvah basically once a year, like before Yom Kippur. It's just as a spiritual activity, not required. Okay, go to mikvah, all right, so the mikvah, beautiful. And then you have a, now, biblically, do you need a rabbi to, does a rabbi marry the couple? Technically. Does the rabbi marry the couple?
The witnesses.
No.
Not the witnesses.
Hashem marries the couple.
No.
Okay.
Okay, so the groom marries the bride. And by giving the ring, and is witnessed by two kosher witnesses. Why do you need a rabbi there? What's the role of the rabbi?
To officiate, right?
Okay, he's officiating. I know, but in addition to announcing stuff, what really is, we've had a, what they call a Masader Kedushin, a rabbi officiating the wedding for the last 1,700 years. What really is their job?
To make sure everything is halakhically done, correct?
100% correct. Who just said that?
Evan.
Evan, you are 100% correct. So the rabbis there, just the word is, the word in the Hebrew is mesader kiddushin, the word like the seder. He's organizing the wedding, but really the couple's married to each other with the witnesses. Okay, the groom marries the bride, and when the witnesses give the ring, they're married. I nearly got married in 11th grade by joking around. How is that possible? There was another girl, I went to a co-ed Jewish school in Seattle, Washington. And I said to this girl, to give her a quarter, I say, you know, will you be betrothed to me with this quarter according to the law of Moshe in Israel? I was joking around. The woman was way smarter than I was, because I was a idiot 11th grader. And she did not take the ring, but if there were two kosher witnesses and she would have taken it, I mean, it would have been a question, because it may have been done obviously for a joke. But if a guy would give a ring or anything of value to a woman with two kosher witnesses, okay, they're luckily married. No tuxedo, no white dress, no catering hall, no sushi, no ketubah, no photographer, no videographer, no friends, no family. They are luckily married.
Does a kosher witness just mean a halakhic Jew?
It means a halakhically a Jewish person who's observant. An observant, very observant Jew, a person who is careful about Jewish law. Okay? And who's also not a relative. Okay? Even if you have a very observant Jew, but if he's a relative to either the bride or the groom, he's invalid to be a witness. Okay? So the rabbi's role is to ensure that everything's done properly. Okay? That there's that the ketubah's done properly. The ketubah's very complicated. You know, it is, there's a basic form, but there's a lot of technicalities involved, and you got to get it right. And I always bring like five ketubahs to every wedding, because if there's a mistake, the person spells their name wrong, something gets spilled on the ketubah, you want to be prepared. Somebody has gorgeous $1,000 ketubah, they left out the Hebrew word for month, which is a big mistake. So I have to sort of put it in myself, and I'm not a calligrapher. I'll leave the rest to your imagination. So there's always problems with the ketubah. So you got to be done that properly. And then you got to make sure that I officiated an MG wedding for an MG fellow, and I was both the officiating rabbi and one of the witnesses. And right when the groom was putting the ring on the finger of the thing, the very aggressive photographer stepped in front of me, and I could not see it. So if I don't see it, it was a problem. So we had to redo it again. You know what I mean? I mean, these things happen. Okay, so that's process one. The reading of the ketubah is just to separate between the first act and the second act. The blessings of the nesuin, the sheva brachos, which are praises about the institution of marriage, done underneath the chuppah, done by typically family and friends. Typically, the honors are divided between each side. Right, the level anybody can do a read the sheva brachos have to be read by somebody who believes in God. Doesn't have to be Shomer Shabbos. So, and then they go to Yichurim, then they're married. Done. So, all right. So that's the basic components of the marriage. And then, of course, there's speeches underneath the chuppah, and there's a mitzvah to dance, which you saw in front of the bride and groom, and make them happy and have a great party. And then they also do sheva brachos at the end of that wedding feast as well, at the end of the benching, okay? And they could do it anytime they have a meal, which is dedicated for the wedding for the first 7 days of the people's, assuming that either husband or wife, it's their first marriage. And we always have it when people get married, typically when there's a fellowship, and one of the sheva brachos will, on Wednesday night, will do a sheva brachos at MJE. I mean, you may have seen it. You may have seen one before. I don't know if we had one just this year, but it happens pretty often. Any questions about the wedding ceremony, anything about it? a lot of stuff that people do are either a minhag, a custom, or stuff that Jews do which has no legal or halachic significance. The I'm going to review for you. The part that's really critical, the biblical part, is the witnesses. That's a biblical mandated thing. It's got to be witness. The ring, the you know, and that the woman does, you know, accepts this arrangement, okay? And that's the kedushin, the betrothal. And then the blessings and the blessing afterwards and the ketubah are all rabbinic. There's an also a custom which is also rabbinic. What does the groom step on?
A wine glass.
He breaks it.
Or a light bulb.
A light bulb, a vessel, should be something of value. And for what reason?
To remember the destruction of the temple.
So how does one thing have to do with the other? So at the end of the wedding, after they've done the seven blessings, he will say that the statement from the from the book of from Kehilim, that if I forget you, O Jerusalem, which basically says that even though right now at the point of the chuppah is the happiest moment of the bride and groom's life, there's nothing more, just a moment of pure joy of getting married, the moment of being married. Remember that we live in an unredeemed world, as measured by the fact that the temple is destroyed, the Jewish people are not unified, and there's still, we live in a war, which, you know, a world that has war and disease and all kinds of problems. We're not living in the Messianic era, so we break a glass. It used to be the glass which they made the blessings of the marriage blessings on. They would take that very glass, wrap it up, and the groom would step on it, so it would make them a little more dramatic. But they typically have a glass already pre-wrapped, and the key thing is that the groom should break that with the heel, because it has happened. The guy stepped on a rather thick shoe, and a piece of glass went into the guy's foot, thus messing up one's wedding by having a piece of glass stuck into your foot. Okay, any questions about anything about the Jewish wedding? There's so much stuff. I just literally
did you say consummation in 9 minutes?
Say it again?
Did you say consummation in 9 minutes?
Okay, good question, Wally. Doesn't mean that they are, it is, the, in other words, it's when the guy, when the groom brings the bride into the room of seclusion, okay? And there are two witnesses in front. If they're alone for 9 minutes, where they could theoretically consummate the marriage, then, and the wedding is the last step of bringing the bride into the home and creating a Jewish home has been completed.
Sounds a bit like a challenge.
No, they're not having sex. If you want to clarify, they're typically,
eating,
enjoying the moments of being alone for the first, they're being alone. And there's also food typically in that room because they have oftentimes fasted, and they're just hanging out and chilling for 9 minutes.
Okay.
They're having some special time. They're not having sex.
We ate steak in the room.
There you go. I wasn't going to call anybody out for, but I'm not saying that there's no affection going on.
It was affectionate steak eating.
Okay, so there's obviously, for example, I'll just speak about myself. So I grew up, my wife and I, what they call from birth, we did not touch before marriage. So for us, that was the first time hugging at all. So for my first date to our wedding was 6 months. And so... we didn't get to the food just yet, but we did not, but it's not a time for relations because you're going to go after that. People are waiting and you want to have the dancing and everything. You know what I'm saying? Any questions? Any questions about a Jewish wedding at all?
Are there rabbinic or halachic reasons that would discourage from eloping, like just to have the witnesses in a ketubah?
You could. We had at MJE the cheapest wedding I ever saw in my entire life. $500, and the wedding was done in the blue room. A chuppah was rented from Westside Judaica. You need to have a minion, okay? So it was a 2 o'clock Thursday afternoon wedding. It was catered by the local bagel shop, okay? And they got married. Rabbi Wilds officiated. I was there. We were Rabbi Avi Heller, Rabbi Ezra Cohen, myself, Rabbi Daniel Krauss. We had like 10 people. Each person brought a friend and their parents. And for whatever reason, they didn't want to have a big wedding. Nothing wrong with that. Okay? They got married. I guarantee you the thing did not cost a nickel more than $500. So you don't have to have a big wedding.
What is the significance of needing a minion? Is that specifically for the Sheva Brachot?
Yes. The Sheva Brachot must be done in minion because basically the couple is being identified as being a couple in the community. Part of the last step, the second act of the wedding, is that this couple is now a household in the Jewish people. So it's part of being witnessed, being embraced by the community. A minion is the smallest representative of the community, the Jewish people. And therefore, the Sheva Brachot are said in celebration of that to the community. You need a minion for that. So you can't do
Rabbi.
Yeah. Yes.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but what qualifies in terms of level of halakha to be a witness?
Basically, the minimum is Shomer Shabbos and Shomer Kashrut. You know, a person who is, you call a person is halakhically conscientious. Doesn't knowingly violate halakha. You know, does the best they can. You know what I'm saying? They don't willfully violate any mitzvah. Doesn't mean they don't make mistakes, because everybody makes mistakes. You know what I'm saying? But they are people who are, you know, endeavoring. I have a rule when I do a wedding to avoid any kinds of uncomfortability. I say I bring the witnesses, and I only use rabbis. That's my particular stringency. Cause I don't want to get into awkward questions like, you know, is a person Jew-ish? You know what I mean? Do they keep halacha-ish? I don't want no ish. If I'm officiating the wedding, my job is one. That I'm sort of like the wedding referee. I make sure that the deed is done. That the people are 100%, without question, halachically married. That everything was done in a proper fashion. You know what I'm saying? So I don't like to mess around with the people, you know, people that I don't want to have awkward questions, and I also want to avoid awkward conversations. So I have a rule: if I tell the couple, you know, you want to have me, I pick the item. You don't get that choice. You want to have pick the item, get somebody else to do your wedding. It just avoids all the problems. You know what I mean? Because I don't want to ask awkward questions to people. You know what I'm saying?
Thank you.
You got it. Any other questions about weddings? Okay. So when you guys go to for those people who've not been to an Orthodox wedding, I think you're now aware of and educated about what's happening there. Let me throw out a question. In the Reform and Conservative movement, they have a double ring ceremony. What is that? Who could tell me about the double ring ceremony? Does anybody know what a double ring ceremony is?
Giving a ring to the groom?
Giving the ring to the groom. Do Orthodox weddings allow that?
No, because they find that men that wears the ring, they find it to be feminine.
No, that's not the reason.
You
can give a ring to the groom. Many modern Orthodox men do wear a wedding band, and they'll give the bride will give her husband a ring in the yichud room, in the room of seclusion. Why, from an Orthodox standpoint, will they not do it underneath the chuppah?
Because the groom is acquiring the bride?
No, he's not acquiring it, because acquisition would mean that he would be able to sell her or rent her out, which, of course, as you know, prostitution is forbidden. Okay? So is slavery. It's not a slavery. It's not a prostitution. He is acquiring rights of exclusivity. Now, if she gives him a ring, then it becomes unclear whose rights of exclusivity being acquired here. It undermines what's really happening. Now, according to Jewish law, according to the Torah and rabbinic law, can a man marry more than one woman?
Yes, they can.
Yes. Now, since the year 1000, the Ashkenazi community has forbidden that. Polygamy has been forbidden in the Ashkenazi community for the last 1,000 years.
What?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Now, Sephardim, when they had the great immigration from Yemen in 1951, 1952, they did not accept that. So it was very common for a man to be married to one, two, or three wives. And the rule.
In what year?
1952.
1952? Really?
Yeah, the rule in Israel is like this. Okay, polygamy is forbidden, but if you marry more than one wife, then you came from a smart country where it was permitted, then it's allowed. It's grandfathered in. So that's why the woman is not acquiring rights of exclusivity, because a man is halakhically not exclusive. Now,
are there Jewish men today with multiple wives?
No. Now, okay. The Sephardim have got on board with the Ashkenazi prohibition of no polygamy. Okay, so just letting everybody know, about, you know, that's obvious. But, all right. So that's what the deal is. Because, you know, I mean, I'm giving you sort of like the straight thing. So a double ring ceremony is a halachic problem because it makes the whole betrothal unclear what's happening. Okay. Now, what really is a get? What is a get doing? What is it? First of all, what's a get? You need to know what a get is.
It's releasing a Jewish woman from her commitment to the marriage.
Right. So the get, the Jewish divorce, the Jewish bill of divorce, is basically canceling the kedushin. It's now it's saying that this rights of exclusivity is now over, and now this woman is free to be married to somebody else. It's a canceling of the marriage. The canceling of the marriage bond. Okay? The marriage bond.
Rabbi, I'm okay.
The marriage bond.
Rabbi, have you...
Yeah.
Have you ever known anyone who... or known of a community where a man refused a woman again?
Of course. That's why at MJE, we do not do weddings unless there's a halachic prenuptial agreement, which says that if the bride, the woman and man are no longer living together, and either one of them requests the other to go to a Beis Din for a get, there will be a penalty of $150 per day if one of the two refuse to show up at the base din for the get. And that has a as a way to ensure compliance, it has 100% success rate. So that's the way to go. All right, this is not a comprehensive study, but this is sort of like giving you guys sort of a broad sense of what's involved. If you know what the basic ideas are, something for you guys to think about, and you got to see the video. I sent you, if you want to see the video yourself, it's a link on the sheet that I sent you earlier today. And if you have any questions, feel free to email me. Look forward to seeing you guys real soon. And don't forget, everybody, wash your hands for 20 seconds.
Thank you, Rabbi.
All right, guys, all the best.
Thank you. Have a great night.
All the best.
Thank you.